Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, has the UK integrated its Muslim population?
A growing bibliography of academic and popular books on the subject makes it easy to track the narratives and history of Islam in the UK up until the present day. The recent republication of Fred Halliday's Arabs in Exile, Yemeni Migrants in Urban Britain is viewed as a significant starting point as it captures the experiences of the first group of Muslim settlers in modern Britain. In Ron Gee's latest book, Islam in Victorian Britain, The Life and Times of Abdullah Quilliam, he celebrates one of the most significant Muslim personalities in 19th century Britain. A high society British Muslim, Quilliam was noted for founding England's first mosque and Islamic centre. Over 50% of today's UK Muslims are born and raised here. Therefore, the narratives of the British Muslim community have obviously evolved. Gilead raised Muslims in Britain provides an informed understanding of the British Muslim civic and cultural engagement through the works of journalists, artists, sports personalities and business entrepreneurs. Present-day experiences vary from earlier ones, and as today's younger British Muslims place themselves in the context of nationality, loyalty and citizenship, the story moves from migration and community formation to one of identity, belonging and cultural difference. Today on Islam and Life, we ask, has the UK integrated its Muslim population?
Yes, indeed, it might be important to come with another question. For years, with the first wave of immigrants coming to the UK and other European countries, we have been facing the question, Muslims should integrate into the country, understanding the environment, the law, the legislation, the culture. And with the second, third and onward generations, it's as if now we are talking about, you know, citizenship and Muslim or British Muslims, Western Muslims, European Muslims, and still it's as if when we speak about this presence, there is something which is missing in the whole narrative. It's as if Islam is still a foreign religion with foreigners always perceived as immigrants, and there is a difficulty here for the Western countries, for the UK for example, to integrate the Islamic factor. So what should be done to get that level of understanding? And in fact, indeed, it's a two-way process. Muslims should understand the environment, but at the same time, there is something which is an understanding coming from the Western countries, from the UK, to integrate in the curriculum, in his memory and history, these Islamic factors as a positive factor, a contributing factor towards pluralism. So how can we change this and move on into something which is a more dialogue and more understanding between citizens coming from different backgrounds, from religious backgrounds, and even sometimes with no religious background at all? So these are critical questions within a pluralistic society. To answer these questions, I'm joined by Dr. Muhammad Siddiq Seddon, lecturer of Islamic Studies at the University of Chester. He has co-authored and edited a number of books on historical and contemporary issues relating to Islam and Muslim communities in Britain and the West. So thank you, Doctor, for being with us today. And as we have just seen and with my introduction, saying that, you know, if we have to think about the first generations and the first waves of immigrants at the beginning, we always had as a discussion integration. Even, by the way, after July the 7th, what we got from the government is that what is Britishness and the Muslims should integrate and understand that. So how do you see it? Because you have studied this from the first generation to now. Is there a shift? Is there something? Are we still having or facing the same questions? Or do we have maybe to question the questions that we are facing?
Well, Tariq, I think the first thing we have to say is that integration is not, as you said, a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And providing that both communities, that is the wider indigenous community and the settled Muslim community, play by the rules of the road, then integration should be a meeting on this two-way street. But I think in order to accelerate that process, because integration is a kind of buzzword of the moment, I think the wider society has to revisit its history in relationship to when Muslims first settled in the UK. We're not talking about post-Second World War here, although that is, of course, when significant numbers of originally single male migrants from post-colonial Commonwealth countries came to lend their blood, sweat and tears to the economic development of Britain after the Second World War. But actually, the migration of Muslims goes back at least 200 years, if not before. We could start with, of course, the Yemeni communities up and down the British Docklands that begins really around the 1830s, when Britain becomes a protectorate of the port of Aden, and as a result of that it becomes an important coaling station, and then Yemeni sailors and sailors from the Far East make their way to British ports as a result of that. And it's that settlement where, again, single male Lascars, or Oriental sailors as they were first called, began to settle in the Docklands and marry indigenous wives, and then began to produce, if you like, children from both cultures.
How do you explain this? Because this is something which is not only a reality in the UK. Because to integrate the fact that you have British citizens who are Muslims at the same time, and it's not so new. It's as if now we are talking about new phenomenon. But for example, you are talking about 200 years. You go to France, you go to Spain, you go to so many European countries, it's as if there is a dark hole here. We are not talking about it. We start after the Second World War, and there is something in history and memory which is missing. How do you explain this? Because, yes, that's true. If we want to be serious about this issue, it has to come to this and come to the curriculum, what we are teaching our kids in our schools about this, you know, 200 centuries, because to neglect this means that there is something which is a missing link between the people.
I think that Europe has a real problem, essentially, with its ideas about pluralism and diversity in terms of ethnicity and race. And the problem with debates around
But you're not mentioning religion.
Well, I think
it's on purpose.
I would say that religion became a secondary factor.
Okay.
And has only been on the agenda within the last, I would say, 30 years. But before that, Muslims and significant others who settled in Britain were not seen in terms of their religiosity. They were seen in terms of their ethnicity and in terms of their colour. And although countries like Britain tried to deal with this perceived problem of the superficial coloured other by approaches in education such as multiculturalism, which tried to deal with this idea that race is not really a problem, you know, we're a diverse society and we celebrate that, it didn't really work. That's largely because in the process of this kind of engineered integration, there was a shift in identity from ethnicities to religiosity. And that was accelerated by things like, if you like, the Islamic Revolution, 1979, the Satanic Verses affair, and so
all
on.
The controversies around the world that are connected. And also something which is also important around Europe is that the common, you know, factor or the common feature that we had through all this new immigrants from Turkey, Pakistan, North Africa, were all Muslims, and with the perception they are bringing an other cultures. It's not our culture. It's as if, you know, Europe, it's built against this perception that, you know, the Asian, Arab and Turkish culture are not the Western and not the European one.
Well, exactly. One only has to read seminal works like Edward Said's Orientalism to discover the discourse and the roots of the discourse that go back long into Europe's history and are deep-rooted in the kind of shared or communal psyche of Europeans about who the other is. And, of course, the other, in terms of Orientalism, Edward Said tells us, is generally the Muslim other. And as you rightly say, the problem for pluralistic, diverse, modern Europe is that they have large numbers of Muslim communities now very well settled amongst their citizens. So how do they deal with this? Multiculturalism has failed, allegedly. So how do they engage?
So I want to tackle this issue because, you know, I'm you know, traveling around Europe and Western countries, but I'm used to say that, look, if you look at facts and figures beyond perceptions, you will see that the Muslim communities and the Muslims at the grassroots level, they are getting the three L's that are so important for us to integrate a language. First, law, abiding by the law of the country, the languages of the specific or the respective countries, and the loyalty that they want the best for the country. So. And even if we go for, you know, at the level of, you know, scholarship and Muslim scholars, they are trying to deal with the new environment. Of course, it's not enough. We need to have more answers because we are dealing with new challenges. But I'm also facing questions coming from Muslims. So that's all fine. We are doing our job. But the surrounding society is still not accepting us as fully Western or European or British citizens. It's as if there is something which is missing. And I think that it's a fair point. There is something here that we have to take into account. Asking the society, are you integrating your Muslims as full citizens? So I want you to say something about this. What is the state of affairs and what could be done to improve the situation? So let us first, the state of affairs. You spoke about something, yes, which is important, history. Something is missing there. What else?
Well, I think to go back to your three L's, I think there's no doubt that Muslim communities across Europe have ticked off all of those three L's. I think what's missing, and of course you pointed towards history, is exactly that. The reality that Muslims have been around far longer than post-war, you know, exactly, economic migration. Mm. Now, Muslim scholars are beginning, and some more enlightened non-Muslim scholars, I have to say, are beginning to accept that reality and are beginning to do some serious research to more or less uncover these forgotten archives and narratives of settlement of Muslims. And even quite early, this loyalty question was solved. I mean, one example, the Yemeni settlers in the First World War, they gave over 3,000 of their lives volunteering on the merchant ship supplying vital supplies to British troops on the war front. The question of loyalty was never asked there, yes, because it was proved. So these questions are kind of redundant, and they would evaporate if wider society tackles its history in a more inclusive way.
Yes.
And by doing so, I think there has to be a filtering down. This knowledge needs to be spread and shared within the classroom, in tertiary state education.
Yes.
Not to promote Islam, but simply to realize the reality of diversity that, as I said, goes way back beyond post-Second World War migration.
Yes, but wouldn't you say that, why is it not done? Why do we have this problem in schools? Is it not also because today there is something which is the perception that this Muslims or the British Muslims are not completely British citizens, still that they have to do more. It's a kind of, we are scared of their presence. And throughout Europe now, you know, just we had this election in the Netherlands, and the one who is just comparing the Quran with Mein Kampf of Hitler have, you know, tripled his, just the rate of his presence in the Dutch parliament, which is just scary for the future of our Europe.
Yes.
So I would say for us, knowing that the situation, it's also, you know, when we were to speak about the UK, it was, you know, the UK is a country where it's easy to be a Muslim, easier, yes, than other European countries. Still after July the 7th, problems are coming, Britishness, identity, who are you, what do you want to do? I would say now that what could we expect from the British society to really go towards something which is, okay, be more inclusive with your memory. Open up the curriculum in your schools, in our schools, because at the end of the day, these are our kids. They are going to live together. What are the steps that we should expect from a government, from citizens, and from the people around us?
Well, I think changes are beginning to happen. There is no doubt that there has been a process of convenient othering that's been tied into faulted foreign policy. and has pathologized Muslims as this kind of continued kind of ghostly threat in some way that challenges our ideas about what European culture and civilization might be. But I think beyond that now, because we're moving into second, third generation British and European-born progeny, Muslims are beginning to kind of state their claim in wider society. So Muslims are becoming teachers. Muslims are becoming academics in the mainstream. Muslims are becoming policymakers at governmental level, at regional government level, etc. So I'm optimistic. I'm not pessimistic. And I think it's a kind of organic development. So I think that process of inclusiveness, of revisiting history that accepts a reality of continued diversity beyond, as I said, you know, recent migration, that's beginning to happen. But I think at the same time, Muslims have to decide collectively, there has to be an internal debate amongst Muslims to decide what kind of Muslims they want to be in a European context. And I would suggest that we're probably better off reading Ibn Khaldun and Ibn Battuta rather than Ibn Taymiyyah and Ibn Kathir to find out what Muslimness means in a cultural and civilizational
context. Let us come to this, because this is an important part of the Muslim responsibility, because they are not victims. They have to they are also accountable, and they have to just face up to the challenges of being, you know, British Muslims and what they have to do. But when I'm asking you about, you know, the reality of the government and the society, your reference are quite clearly, it's a question of time, it's happening, Muslims are now more visible, they are within. So don't you expect from, for example, government, the government or the UK government, because we are talking about the UK now, about our fellow citizens to do more in this? Because, you know, very often when I'm lecturing, I'm asking my fellow citizens in the UK, can you just get this, that it might be that the Muslim presence is a contribution, it's a richness, it's something which is adding an added value to the society? So this is also something which is quite important, you know, this passive attitude, we are the host country and you have to prove. We may ask something else, don't you think so?
Well, that's a very important question, and I think beyond the pathologizing and problematizing of Muslim settlement in Britain and Europe, there is an overwhelming narrative, an untold narrative of success, successful integration, successful settlement, successful community formation,
that's a very important
successful
point, yes.
Integration into wider society. But they're the stories that are lost in the kind of more, well, exciting stories that tie up with all this idea that Muslims are a menace somehow. I mean, challenging that stereotype means that Muslims themselves have to do more. Now, one of the problems is that the wider communities, the indigenous communities, see Muslims as very monolithic. And they forget that there is an incredible diversity amongst Muslim communities, both in Britain. If we talk about the Muslim community in Britain, it's wrong, it's erroneous. We have to talk about Muslim communities. So not only are Muslims ethnically and culturally diverse, they're also very diverse theologically in terms of their expressions. This leads us to another problem, because amongst this theological diversity, we have Muslims who are very comfortable with this idea of being both British, being both European, and being Muslim. But at the same time, we have other elements, second generation and third generation, who still see this dual identity as a tension that's unresolved for them. And as I said before, I think they're informed by the wrong sources, the wrong historical kind of references that they're looking at to inform them about what Muslimness means in the minority European context.
Yes, I think that this is important. If we come back now to the Muslim responsibility, if really we are, as we were talking about history and memory, it's also for them to learn and to study this history and this memory, to be able to say, look, we are not coming from nowhere. We are coming from very long presence in this country, and the contribution, not only the contribution at the academic level, it's also quite important to say, look, who built this country after the Second World War? Don't ask me to integrate when in your memory my fathers and mothers are not integrated, building this country and helping in the economic ground. So this very strong, assertive presence saying, look, we have been here for years, this is something which is important. To be, as you said, as teachers and within academia, in the job market, everywhere, to be visible as a contributing presence, this is something which is important. What else do you think could and should be expected from this British Muslims to make it possible for our fellow citizens to integrate into their mind and heart that in fact we are building a common society and a common future?
Well, Tariq, that's a very important point and question that you pose. In my own kind of community events, when I take out aspects of my academic research and help it to filter down to young Muslims regarding their kind of extended history of settlement in the UK, have found it to be a very empowering process, that when British and European-born Muslims find out about this lengthy presence, this very, very kind of diverse and very kind of full history of engagement and settlement in the West, they are transformed. Because this information gives them very important cultural anchorage. It develops their sense of belonging, because they can connect through a history that belongs
memory,
to them.
Memory, a sense of belonging are connected.
So we go back to the two-way street idea, that whilst the idea of settlement beyond economic post-colonial Second World War settlement has to be kind of propagated amongst the wider community, the indigenous communities, at the same time we need to make sure that young people are also from the Muslim communities are connected with this history as a means of self-empowerment, as a means of anchoring themselves socially, politically, culturally to their place of settlement. How do we do this? Well, Muslims obviously have to get together. We do this by, you know, very actively seeking to take this information out collectively, individually, into the communities that need to connect with this information. So either we work with schools, we work with local communities, we work with central government if we need to, or regional governments, whatever pathways we can take into kind of taking and propagating this idea of inclusiveness, this idea of Muslim history, then, you know, we need to engage.
It could be through schools, it could be through teaching, but it, as also you are doing and so many others are doing, is writing books and saying, look, this is also the past contribution, and this is also the roots for us for the future contribution, and this intellectual contribution is quite important, the social contribution as well.
Exactly, because we have to operate at all levels. But I'm careful that as an academic that my discourse is not limited to an internal discourse that's exclusive to academics. I try my utmost to make sure that my research filters down in a usable way
reaching
to
out
the wider community, be it Muslim or non-Muslim. I don't make that difference.
Well, I think it's quite important. Thank you so much for that. I think that during this discussion, coming back to the reality and the history of the Muslim presence in the UK, but it's quite the same in so many European countries, is really to come back to history and memory. Because the best way to integrate the Muslim presence today is to come back to history and to study what happened. And then we discover that this presence is a very long presence, that it's a very long contribution, as you said, which is quite important. More than 200 years ago, the Muslims were already there and contributing to the reality of the country, the social contribution, economic contribution. And then through history, this is something which is integrating this past. And it's a two-way process for the Muslims to do much more, to be known, to be visible, to contribute, and for the surrounding society and the fellow citizens to know about this this presence, to know about this past, to know about these exchanges and mutual respect that is part of this history between West and the Islamic civilization, much more than what we think. And at the end, when we look at facts and figures, and we said this, and you said that you were very optimistic, we see that it's going much better than what we think, and that things are moving and things are changing on the ground at many levels, from the social ground to the academic, with people being much more involved now and Muslims being involved within academia to contribute to this intellectual discussion and mutual understanding and respect. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is how to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Dr. Muhammad Sadon. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah.